Len Fasano is with us this morning. And again, Senator, thank you so much for being with us.
Senator, good morning. Welcome to Brad and Dan.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on. And if you don't mind, I really want to get started on the budget because I think there's a lot of preconceived notions which are wrong. I think the facts are the facts. And I get upset when I hear folks say this is Republican Party did not caved, my words, not others, because those are absolutely falsehoods. And the people are speaking the most about the budget are the people who perhaps know the least about the budget. So let me start.
We know about the budget, Senator.
Senator, I got to tell you right now, I probably don't know much about the budget, but can you tell our audience that this budget is going to make it less expensive to live in Connecticut than it is now?
And the answer is absolutely yes. And let me tell you right away, here's the first thing that it does. Social Security taxes are not being taxed for the first time since 1991. So if you have Social Security, you're not being taxed.
Starting when?
That's a less expense. Starting January 1st, 2018, for 2017 fiscal taxable year. Pensions under $75,000 if you're a single person, not being taxed. Because then you get taxed on dollar one, not at $76,000. It goes back to dollar one. If you're filing joint return, pensions under $100,000 are not being taxed for the first time since the income tax has gone in. Number two, we have a true spending cap. Let's understand that. In 1991, the income tax was passed with a promise that we would have a spending cap. However, what the Constitution said, because it was a constitutional change at the time, was we're going to define the spending cap. And as soon as the legislature gets around to defining the spending cap, it would take three-fifths of the General Assembly to change that. Three-fifths. Since 1991, we had at least 11 years of Republican governorship with Democratic legislature, and the spending cap was not defined, which means we had a cap, but if you don't define what you include within that cap, in other words, how much you can spend before you can't spend anymore, if you don't define those terms, you just do your budget and say, well, that's not under the spending cap. So that's what they would do for years. You take that stuff out and say, well, that's not under the spending cap. We're going to move that from under the cap. And as long as the Democrats had a majority, they were able to do it. Well, we defined the spending cap. The promise that was made in 1991 was fulfilled yesterday, that there is now a constitutionally defined spending cap, that the only time you could exceed that cap is on unique emergencies declared by the governor. That's already in the Constitution. We didn't put it in. It was already in there. And secondly, if three-fifths of the General Assembly agree, which is a wide majority, you have to put some escape clause because you can't predict a natural disaster event where you need more money poured in or some other program comes on, the federal government gives us money like crumbling foundation issue or whatever it may be, that you have to use that money. And if it's under the cap, you may run into a problem, and you don't ever want to completely handcuff yourself. And that's why they agreed to this back in 91, a exception, but would take two-thirds, a supermajority of the House and the Senate, to break it. So it's the first time.
Senator, what do you say? Because, Senator,
we got that promise completed.
Well, and you know what? And that's all in good, although a lot of people would say that's the minutiae of government, as important as it is.
The minutiae, but how can you say that? How do you make it less expensive? And the way you make it less expensive is you spend less and you borrow less.
Okay, that's fair. But, Senator, what do you say? What do you say to the person who now gets his Social Security and pension, not going to be taxed, the state income tax, but then they get their property tax, and they see, my goodness, my property tax on my motor vehicle went up because the threshold was increased to 45 mils as approved under this budget.
No, That's backwards. What this was done, by the way, when you say Republican light, if some of the comments were, that was a Democratic proposal put in by Marty Looney. So people in the cities, pay less in motor vehicle tax, predominantly in the cities, pay less in motor vehicle tax because their mill rate is so high. Well, their mill rate is so high because the city's budgets are a little out of control. And what they're saying, well, because their mill rate is high, it's unfair that a car in North Haven pays less in a car tax than a car, same car, in New Haven. And my argument is yes, because in North Haven we control our budgets, we keep our mill rate low. And in New Haven they get an explosion of a budget. They have salaries and administrative costs are out the wazoo. And if you say, okay, don't pay your car tax, your car tax is going to be lower. We're going to pay the difference. So the way it worked was Looney said, I want to cap the car tax at a level. It was supposed to go down to 32. And the state, you and I, as we pay our income taxes, we're going to pay the difference in any city or town that the mill rate was higher than 32. So they're capped at 32, and we all pick up the difference between 32 and whatever that mill rate is. And we said, don't make that promise. It costs a lot of money, number one. And number two, it's not a fair promise. We got to get our cities under control with their mill rates, like Hartford and the rest of them. We got to get them under control.
But, you know, Marty what? But it, Torrington, you know,
to
Torrington is a financial.
We moved it to 45.
What do you, well let's use, we'll use Torrington as an example, Senator. Torrington is a city made up of a lot of retirees that is a financially sound city, but is also listed as a distressed city economically. This person in Torrington who's now on Social Security, it is not going to have to pay a state income tax on Social Security, is going to see the property tax on his car go up to 45 mils. So how is that a break for the person in Torrington?
The difference between where they are and 45 mils is probably less than $150 a year, and now their total Social Security is not being taxed. So there's a little bit of trade-off. You can't solve everybody. Any bill we pass, any budget we pass, you can find one item that's wrong. Look at the totality of the budget. You said, how do you make it less expensive in the state of Connecticut? How about if we control our borrowing? Well, we have a borrowing cap, a bonding cap. For the first time in Connecticut's history, we have a borrowing cap that makes sense. It says, you know what? Governor Rao used to bond at $1.6 billion. Governor Malloy went up to almost $3 billion. Take your mortgage, double it, and tell me if you can continue living where you are. Well, that's what has happened. We have brought that back down and said you cannot exceed $1.9 billion. Now, that's going to help a little bit. I think next year turns out like a 2019, a $10 million savings. But you know what? In 2020, 2021, 2022, when the governor's bonding starts to slow down, you know, goes through the rigors and gets paid off, you're going to see a significant beat. And I've always told you guys, you got to do a budget for today, and you got to do a budget for 10 years from now if you're going to keep people in this state. That's what we've done. Another cost of living decrease. Let's go back to the cost of living decrease. In Connecticut, there's an estate tax and a federal tax, as you're aware. Well, between the estate and the federal tax, a lot of people are leaving because we're one of the few states who have a gap. We stopped that gap. We closed that gap so we could keep people here in Connecticut and not force them to leave. Those are things we couldn't even get public hearings on a bonding cap. We couldn't even get a public hearing on a spending cap years ago. And we got that approved this year. And on the municipal side, when you talk about municipal, when you do union contracts, it used to be if there was a town that had a big reserve account, they could look at that for the ability to pay that union contract. Well, you know what? 15% of that money no longer you can look at. We help the towns. We allow towns who want to regionalize to look at collective bargaining agreements and open them up and renegotiate them so we could get more regionalization so towns can better organize themselves and save money. Can you ever think of 3 years ago saying union contracts could be reopened?
These
are monumental things.
And I might understand some of that, Senator, but how do you explain you had members of your own caucus, two of your own senators couldn't support this budget? What do you say to that?
I would say 2 out of 36 speaks. So when two people say, I will never, ever support a tax increase, that to me is not thinking big. It's not. It's you to say that, I don't know what's going to happen in the future. No one knows what's going to happen to the future. And you know what? When something good is about to pass and you can vote no and let everyone else carry the burden, it's not a bad place to be selfishly. It doesn't mean it's a bad place to be correctly, because this budget, if this budget didn't go through, you think that guy in Torrington was going to get killed? If this budget didn't go through, everybody in Torrington was going to get hit with a 3 or 4 mil increase, because they were going to get destroyed in education. Destroyed. If I could, we got our budget passed. Fellas, you got to keep your eye on the ball. We got a Republican budget passed by a majority vote. If you remember, 3 dissident Democrats came over in the Senate, and 5 or 7, whatever it was, in the House, we got that passed. If I could get that a veto override, we wouldn't be talking about this, but I couldn't. No matter how hard I tried behind the scenes, I could not get that override. If I stayed on that, we all stayed on that, said let Rome burn, we'd all be waking up. Crumbling foundations wouldn't have one dime of money today. Not one dime. And those people would be suffering. And I know you've advocated excellently for those guys. Well, they have a great program that's going to help them out. That would not be happening today, as another feature. Mill rates would have gone up across this whole state. Social services would have been slashed to the bone. Your opioid epidemic, no help on that, because none of that was going to be funded under his executive order. So we're going to sit here and let people really suffer, and maybe we get another budget passed, but it would never look like this, I guarantee you that.
Senator,
you are not going to correct the state of Connecticut in one term and in one budget. But to argue that stuff that Republicans have talked about for 25 and 30 years that we got done, and to say, well, no, let's leave that on the table so in 2018 we have talking points for political advantage, does not work. It does not work. You have to move the state forward. This is the first step. It is a large step, not a small step. And it is going to compound. And you'll see what happens next session. But without this, I would argue we have not moved the Republican Party forward.
No, okay. Senator, what about Hartford for next year? We know about this year, but what about next year when we read that Hartford's problems extend way beyond this year?
So this is why we did Hartford. I think you guys would agree to me we have to keep businesses in Connecticut. And I think you agree with me we've got to keep the big businesses in Connecticut. So when leaders in Connecticut of big businesses call me up and call all the leaders up and say, listen, we are going to donate our time, talent, efforts, and our companies are going to invest in businesses in Connecticut, particularly in Hartford. Give us a chance to do it. Give Hartford the minimal it will take to keep them going, and we're going to come in and help. And not only did they ask that, they asked us collectively to pass some legislation that allow them to be plugged into the committees so they, all the talent, these are big, big businesses, all the talent can come in and give suggestions to our Commerce Committee on how to do better in Connecticut as a totality, but particularly Hartford, because they believe we need to have a city that's a real city in Hartford. Bridgeport, love them, but they're very close to New York. New Haven is dominated by Yale. So they said, Hartford is the place, give us that opportunity. So we gave the minimal amount of funding just to see if Hartford can move. Within that bill is the right to break union contracts, renegotiate union contracts, take them all apart, start from scratch, by an independent body, not a political body. So we're going to give them the opportunity for 2 years. And we're all going to hawk them, and this is what I said in a circle. We're going to watch them. They wanted, I forgot, it was like $130 million for bonding. We said, no, we'll give you 40 for the XL Center. And the reason why we give them 40 is they've got 5 contracts coming up, including naming rights. And if you don't have, when you're asking somebody to put big dollars in there, some renovation right to the building, you're not going to get that naming right, and now you're going backwards. So we said, okay, we'll give you, out of the $125, $130 million, yep, we're going to give you about $40
million. All right.
But
that,
you have
Senator,
to look. You
Senator,
have to
I wish
look
we had more time. We're running out of time. Senator, thank you, as always. You're very open with us. And thank you very much for appearing on the show, but we are out of time.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thanks, Senator. Take care. Let's get a quick rundown on traffic, Brad.
Okay, 11 minutes before 6 o'clock. And